Welcome. This is my new edition of A Better You with Coach Caroline. Today I'm interviewing one of my favorite professors from the University of Pennsylvania, and it's Dr. Karen Rybich, who's not only brilliant but very, very funny. She's the co-author of The Resilience Factor, which is a book I recommend to everyone I know, including all my clients. It's a wonderful book, and resilience is a critical component in living a flourishing life. Karen is a research associate in the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, as well as many other things, the mother of four children, which is really impressive, too. So welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure you'll be funny and brilliant for
But no pressure.
No pressure. Okay, here's a softball, Karen. Tell me why resilience is so important in living a happy, flourishing life.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most important questions around resilience. And to me, resilience is a life skill that, you know, regardless of what our life is like now, one thing that is certain is that our life is going to include change, it's going to include stress, and unfortunately for some people it includes, you know, major sort of negative life situations or trauma. And resilience is the set of skills that we marshal that help us navigate, you know, everyday stress. It helps us bounce back from major adversities, and it helps us sort of steer clear through, you know, the change that occurs in all of our lives. And I think one of the things, Caroline, that I really like to make sure people understand about resilience is that it's not a, you know, you either have it or you don't kind of thing, that regardless of how resilient we are today, there are things we can do, there are skills that we can learn that increase our resilience. So resilience is not a hardwired personality trait. It's a skill, a set of skills. And we know from our research that there are, you know, effective ways that people can increase their resilience.
And so now you have to tell us, what are some of the things you can do to increase your resilience? How do you know what your, for example, your resilience score is?
Yeah.
So that's just right there.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, another thing that I think is important about resilience is that we're all resilient. In some regards, in some areas of our life, we are resilient. So, you know, if your listeners kind of think about, you know, the last, you know, couple of weeks, they'll probably be able to identify a handful of challenges that they handled gracefully, that they, you know, rose to the occasion, they got the job done, and they felt empowered by it. We can all also, however, identify a couple of things that happened in the last few weeks where we kind of feel like, you know, we had two left feet, we were stumbling through, our emotions were sort of kind of got the better of us, and we kind of got that sense of feeling stuck. And one of the, I think, key ways to begin to change your resilience is to notice the situations in which you're already resilient and sit back and say, okay, now what am I doing in this situation? How is it that I'm handling this with so much sort of pluck? And contrast that to situations where you feel that sense of being stuck and not sort of sure how to move forward. Because just paying attention, just building your awareness is a great way to start to tune into what I think is sort of probably one of the most critical aspects. And I talk about that as your ticker tape beliefs, or lately, since the younger folks don't know what a ticker tape is, I talk about it as your internal radio station. And that's the, you know, 24/7, it plays nothing but me, me, me. It's what we're saying to ourselves in the heat of the moment of an adversity. And if you listen to what you're saying to yourselves in those situations where you're sort of chugging through fairly confidently and doing well, what you're saying to yourself is very different than what you're saying to yourself when you're feeling stuck. And so one of the most basic ways people can start to increase their resilience is to tune into that radio station, listen to what they're saying to themselves, and then to start to ask themselves questions like, am I seeing this accurately? Is there another way that I could understand what's going on? What would be a more positive, more optimistic way to think about the situation? And here's a critical question. Where do I have control? I mean, what resilience builds on is our sense of mastery and control. And so if we're able to ask ourselves that question in the heat of the moment, okay, where do I have control? What can I do now to positively affect the situation? That provides sort of the scaffolding to climb ourselves out of that feeling of being stuck.
And so can you build resilience in one part of your life, let's say resilience in being a mother, and then find that it bleeds into other areas, just like self-regulation in one area can then bleed into another?
I think that's such a great question. Yeah, I mean, when I work with clients or if I'm doing, let's say, a parenting workshop, my goal is always to start with an area that the person already feels somewhat resilient in, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm sure this is stuff you talk a lot about with your clients and your other work, but, you know, it's easier to develop a strength than it is to counter a weakness. And so with resilience, I think that same message holds. So let's say I'm working with someone who feels a bit more resilient in the mom domain, but then professionally it's sort of harder. Well, we'll do everything we can to sort of max out in terms of resilience in her personal life. And then we'll sort of have some activities around how can you bring this mindset with you to your office? And vice versa. I mean, I work with a lot of people where it's the professional realm where they feel confident and on top of things and problem solvers. And then when they get home, maybe partly because they're more tired and that depletes you, things don't feel as smooth. And so I think you're right that the relationship between resilience and I think self-regulation, as you're pointing out, that there is a bleed over, a contagion, I like to think of it, effect. And so starting with something, so, you know, I guess for your listeners, one take-home message from this is pick an area that you already feel somewhat resilient in, practice some of the skills of resilience, and then challenge yourself to translate that, to bring that with you to a situation where you don't feel quite as resilient.
Okay, that's a great idea. It brings me to a related question, which is, do resilient people have a similar set of skills like a good sense of humor that allow them to be more resilient than others?
Yeah, so resilience, one really important aspect of resilience is coping. I mean, another way to think about resilience is your what do you rely on? What are your go-to coping strategies? And there's a lot of individual difference there. I mean, for me, one of my top character strengths on the VIA strength survey is playfulness and humor. And I absolutely see it in my life that when I'm under a lot of pressure, my humor is something that I go to help myself through it. So I do think, and there's other research that shows that humor is an important aspect of resilience. But even if humor's not your thing, I mean, that's not where you go naturally, the more critical or the broader question is, what are your strengths? What are the coping strengths that you can pull on when you're challenged by an adversity? So for one person, it might be humor. For another person, it might be, you know, I've got this incredible ability to knuckle down and to persevere, and I can just go relentlessly, and I can just sort of bulldoze my way through an adversity. And so I think another question for folks to ask themselves are, you know, what are my go-to coping strategies, and how can I use them fuller or more often when I'm under pressure?
Okay, so why don't you give me an example then of what a typical ticker tape belief might be for someone who's feeling unresilient, and then let's just pick a few strengths from the VIA: bravery, wisdom, the ability to love and be loved. What if those are somewhere in the top five or even the top 10, and you're feeling unresilient in the workplace?
Yeah, so I think you asked about what are those ticker tape beliefs. I think the common one that people can identify with, and I would say this might be slightly more true of women than men, is those catastrophic negative beliefs. And so let's say you have, you know, your boss, you know, plops something down in your in tray and he says, you know, I need this by 5 o'clock, and you're looking at all the other stuff you had planned to do in the day. It's very common for people, men and women, to say things like to themselves, their ticker tapes to be things like, there's no way I'm going to get this done. If I don't get it done, my boss is going to be really pissed at me. If he's angry at me, then I'm not, you know, then he's not going to give me more jobs. I'm going to really, you know, I'm working myself out of a job here. And that catastrophic chain really depletes energy. It depletes energy. It depletes focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it very hard to stay resilient. And I think the first thing is to listen to it and then to say, okay, now how can I get this back under control? You mentioned one of the strengths of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that's an interesting one for you to mention, because you know, the short story on resilience is probably something like ask for help. You know, that the myth of resilience is that these are folks that go it alone. They, you know, they shoulder any burden without asking for help. And that's a myth, that the most resilient people are able to say, I need help now. And by doing that, that gives them the ability to keep going. And so maybe in this situation we're just using, the asking for help is not, hey, can you do this job for me? But it's to turn to a colleague, someone at the office you feel comfortable with, and say, you know what, I'm feeling overwhelmed. Can you just give me a five-minute pep talk? Help me put this back in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just by reaching out to someone in that way, that's often enough for someone particularly who has a strength of love and kindness and good social relationships to get it back in check.
That makes a lot of sense, because, you know, the happiest people have a good social network too, and so being able to call on the social network would naturally increase your resilience, I would think.
So true. That people who score high on resilience are, I describe them as folks who are comfortable reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of mean two things by that. One is that they're willing to take risks, so they
mm-hmm.
reach out to new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I also mean by that they're willing and able to rely on others.
Mm-hmm.
And they give back. So it's a two-way street, that if I need help from you when I'm feeling down, I'm comfortable. I say, hey, Caroline, give me a hand. But I'll be there for you in return. And so that social support is really important.
Well, that I remember one of the things you taught at Penn, which is so powerful, is about, you know, reaching out to the right people and active constructive responding. Do you want to say a few words about the different kinds of responses you can get from other people when you reach out and how to deal with those?
I think that's, you know, we've all had the experience of reaching out, saying to someone, oh, you know, Caroline, I'm really struggling. Can you give me 5 minutes? And I describe to you what I'm struggling about, and I know you wouldn't say this, but the fictitious Caroline says, you think you've got it bad? Let me tell you what I've got on my plate today. And that's not at all helpful. We would describe that in the work you're talking about as active destructive responding, where the other person basically makes you feel bad or shames you for asking for help. And so part of, I think, you know, another aspect of this is you need to know who are the people that you can go to when you're feeling down. And one way to sort of identify them is to think about when you've gone to people and asked for help in the past, do they ask you questions? Do they engage with you? Do they help you to feel comfortable sharing your concerns? And do they offer helpful advice? Or does it feel like you've become a burden? I mean, if you have that sense, I'm burdening this person, maybe they're sending signals that they're not the kind of person in this particular situation that makes sense to reach out to.
Right. So it really matters when you reach out, you know, the quality of the response. And you have to be mindful just not of your ticker tape, it sounds like, but of the responses you get back when you're trying to be more resilient and factoring in what you get from the environment and from the people you go to. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, a big part of resilience is the intrapersonal stuff. It's the stuff about us, you know, our ability to think accurately and flexibly and optimistically, and our ability to control our emotions. But, you know, there's a whole world out there. And another part of resilience is knowing who are the right people to go to. Who can I ask help of? What are the relationships in my life that sustain me? Because that you know, clearly that matters as well.
Well, yes, and it's another question that was related in my mind, which is when I interviewed Angela Duckworth, I said, how do you get grittier? And she said, well, West Point says that, you know, cadets who come in here leave grittier because this is a gritty environment. So I guess my question around resilience is, can you become more resilient by being around resilient people? Is there a contagion effect to resilience?
Mm. That's okay. You know, I guess I think about that most in relationship of families. So I do a lot of work with, you know, parents, and often the parents come because they're worried about the resilience of their child. You know, my kid doesn't seem to be coping the way I would hope for him or her. And often the first place I start is not with, okay, now what do we need to, how do we bolster your child? It's what, let's listen to the messages. Let's listen to what you talk about around the dinner table, or when you're, you know, rushing from a meeting to bring your child to soccer practice, what are you saying as you're driving the car? And so I do think there is a contagion effect that parents are, you know, we're parents 24/7. We're not just parents in our good moments,
right,
unfortunately. And so we're always teaching our children lessons. And what I say around my dinner table or when I'm in my car, if I'm feeling stressed, is heard at two levels by my child. It's heard one at the you know, primary level is the content of what I'm saying, but the subtext is also getting through. They're learning, boy, does mommy catastrophize? Does mommy believe she has control? What does mommy do when she feels overwhelmed? And they're not thinking about it in that language that I just used, but it's getting in. And so absolutely one way to increase our own resilience is to look at, model ourselves after, talk with, surround ourselves with folks who have resilient skills that we admire.
Huh, that's an intervention that I think I'm going to be working on and finding out if I can, you know, fine-tune it with some of my clients.
I'd love to hear how it goes.
Oh, you will hear, which leads me to a question. What's new? What are you working on now that the world doesn't know about yet that you'd love people to know about resilience or anything, you know, affiliated with the topic of resilience?
Yeah, well, the latest thing I'm doing, which I'm having a real lot of fun with, is I'm working with a company called Pepperidge Farm. They're Goldfish, which is a cracker a lot of people know. And there, we've developed a website together, and the website's called fishfulthinking.com, and it's a place where parents can go. It's free. It's an interactive website that provides parents and educators with, like, the state-of-the-art information about optimism and resilience. We have a quiz that parents can take to get a sense of how resilient their child is already.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the part that's most exciting to me is that I've created – everyday activities that parents can use with children as young as preschool age to promote the foundations of resilience. So there's things that I call mastery moments, so teaching mastery to children. There's a happiness scavenger hunt where parents can help children to really pay attention to the good stuff by taking them on happiness scavenger hunts. There's all sorts of information that's developed to be the kind of things that a busy parent can do in an everyday kind of way with their child. And so we just launched that last week, and I'm really excited about the work.
And what's the website? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, the website is www.fishfulthinking.com.
Oh, so, okay, perfect. So it's easy to navigate once you know the words fishful thinking.
Yeah, and then if you click on tools for parents, once you get there, the information I just described is under tools for parents.
Okay, that is exciting. I will put that in my next newsletter as well. So so I think what you're saying is the bottom line is resilience is not a hardwired trait that you're
yep.
aware of, that you can learn skills that will allow you to become more resilient. It really does start with self-observation and a desire to become more resilient and be aware of who it is that helps you be more resilient and how you may even be undermining your own skills.
I think those are really, really important takeaways.
Okay. Any other wonderful takeaways, Karen, before I close here?
I mean, I think the two words that I would like to sort of emphasize are flexibility. So being able to sort of get outside your typical style of thinking if it's not working for you. So just to ask yourself, how can I think about this differently? That's flexibility. And the other word is accuracy. And to challenge yourself to say, what would be the most accurate understanding that I could come up with to make sense of this situation? So I think flexibility and accuracy are good buzzwords to help sort of promote some of the real core skills of resilience.
Okay, that's terrific. And thank you for your time, Karen. This does conclude my most recent podcast with leaders in the positive psychology field. And today we've been listening to Dr. Karen Rivich at the University of Pennsylvania, and also the author of The Resilience Factor, which is available on this podcasting page, a link to Amazon. So please be sure to buy it and give it to everyone you know and read it yourself. So thank you, Karen.
My pleasure.
And we'll do this again, I'm sure. But for now, I appreciate you bringing resilience to all of our podcasting listeners. So everyone have a wonderful, proactive day, and stay tuned for my next podcast interview. Have a wonderful, resilient time. Bye-bye.